once we made a short film with Kevin Rowland from Dexys Midnight Runners, which Scott instigated, which is yet to be seen, but was quite interesting. It was a kind of three-way collaboration, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Something that will surface in the future, hopefully.
But this is based around... we invented a character called Dave Mayhem, who's possibly Britain's worst punk. And as Jamie said earlier, he had every opportunity to become and possibly a great artist or a great musician or something.
He was kind of blessed with those things that only a few people get, you know, being in the right place at the right time, which people have kind of thrived on and made a career out of. And it's quite clear from the way his path takes him in completely the wrong direction, really.
So there's a very famous gig where the Sex Pistols played in Manchester at the Free Trade Hall, and there was only like 30 people in the audience. And this is true, you know, there's about 30 people in the audience, and these people turn out to be Ian Curtis and Peter Hook and Bernard Sumner, Joy Division,
Morrissey,
Marky Smith,
Simply Red Guy.
Yeah, lots of people that became incredibly
nearly
musicians.
The whole Manchester music scene was based on this one gig, allegedly, and Dave Mayhem manages to avoid any opportunity.
Now, Dave Mayhem was there too, but he didn't like it. He thought it was unprofessional and unmusical, so he became a kind of a punk, but everything always goes slightly wrong. Dave misinterprets everything, and he's slightly psychotic and paranoid, and doesn't have a very fully formed opinion, as you see from the stairwell. He veers between extreme left and extreme right quite dramatically. So everything is... Obviously, he's not a real person, but he's a composite of lots of people that we know, ourselves included. Probably.
Definitely including ourselves. But it was always... Because you presented us with a stairwell to work on, it was always the idea of a timeline became pretty obvious pretty quickly. You know, it had a kind of narrative and a start and a finish. So we kind of came up with that idea pretty much as when we knew we were working in the stairway. And by default, everything that me and Scott do has something to do with pop music. There's no doubt about that, is there really? It's never not been about music. And if and when we do anything else, it's always going to be the same way. It's a kind of, you know, as Scott's always saying, pop music's the greatest art form of them all, even when it's done badly. You know, it's a fascinating subject.
So maybe we could go in the staircase and watch what the staircase is really meaning, or what the achievement...
We could talk through Dave's life, because basically it starts in 76... Well, his life doesn't start in 76. The gig stays in 76, the Sex Pistols gig.
The Sex Pistols, yeah.
And it ends in 2009. Which is when I'll be 40. So he ends on our 40th birthday.
And it was when I was 15. So there's this kind of time, this period of time where all these things take place. And plenty more, you know. We could keep going, really.
Okay, let's go.
Sure.
So we are starting here in the staircase, and as you said just before, this Sex Pistols in July 1976 is the very beginning of...
It was July the 20th, 1976, Manchester, north of England.
It seems that you were there.
I was there. I was one of the people we've made records and been in a very exciting band, maybe one of the lower profile members of the audience. Maybe that's what all this is about, you know?
And it is actually. But, so we start with Dave's first statement is, I went to see this new band, the Sex Pistols, last night. I thought they were rubbish, completely out of tune. Ian liked them, the weirdo. And this is his friend Ian Curtis, who goes on to be the Ian Curtis of Joy Division. And we imagine Dave Mayhem and Ian are school friends, or there's already a fracture in their relationship. Dave's obviously much more conservative in his interests. Dave probably likes sort of fantasy art and things from maybe Salvador Dali, whereas Ian Curtis might like
Nisha.
And David Bowie.
And Albert Camus.
And you have a few copy of cover album covers and...
There's a picture of Johnny Rotten there just to signify the start. And and one of the Ramones, just to illustrate the period.
Exactly. And then we keep on going. We arrived in 79.
Yeah.
I'm not an antichrist.
Dave's now finally thinking about the idea of becoming a punk. Now everybody else in Britain is a punk, and it's really over by 2 years. It's over by at least 1 year, maybe 2 years. Now Dave's really starting to think about becoming a punk, but he's not sure. So he's just sort of misquoting or reinterpreting the famous anarchy lyrics from the Sex Pistols. I'm not an antichrist, I'm not an anarchist. I'm just an ordinary guy who is sick of social injustice and things like that. So Dave's got a social conscience, which is really quite an important aspect of British punk around this time. Lots of bands emerged that were not this kind of, were not about destruction, but it's like the start of Rock Against Racism and things like that. It's like do-gooders, really. People who are trying to find a socially correct cause, you know, C&D and things like that.
The kind of naive idea that punk rock was about empowering the people. And people were going to take action, which is because it's as you go past. Although he's voted Tory when Margaret Thatcher get into power, the next band he goes to see are the Tom Robinson Band, who are by all accounts truly awful, but he thinks of them as totally awesome. We get further round, and Ian, his friend's moaning again. Things aren't going too well. So at the point, Ian Curtis was a kind of on the verge of superstardom, really,
yeah.
People had the utmost respect for him around this period. But as it moves on,
Dave didn't like him really very much.
You have this continuous line, but at the same time with this guy being in a borderline.
He's borderline, mentally?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely. He doesn't know what he is, yeah. And he never does, that's the point, really.
Yeah, and there is always this idea that to commit suicide or...
He doesn't know whether to become Prime Minister or commit suicide. You know, he's confused, very confused. And it's all bound by... His interest in pop is never-ending. Mm. So it's bound by there's politics and pop, and that's really his life. And he didn't really understand either.
But he's looking for a gesture, and he still hasn't made it yet.
No,
it's actually unclear as well, but when we started, how old he was when he went to see the Sex Pistols. Not necessarily 15, as I was.
He's
not necessarily on our timeline. He could have been 40 when he started, but we'll see, you know.
And then this building as well, I've moved to London, it's great.
January 81, he moves to London.
And this is when he starts to call himself Dave Mayhem. That's when he becomes fully formed in his mind as this character.
So maybe for people who doesn't speak English, mayhem is a kind of chaos.
Anarchy or chaos.
Anarchy, yeah. Okay.
I think, interesting enough, me and Scott both made the move from the north of England to London at different times.
And of course, when you move to London, you often make, like in my case, Jamie's case, a nice suburban area, or my case, a nice village, to a shitty flat. You know, and of course it's awful, and for years until you've got any money, you live in awful flats, and it's dreadful.
But it's almost like a kind of statement in a funny sort of way.
But it's a statement in itself.
It's a type of freedom.
The idea of freedom, and this photograph is actually one of the flats near the West Way in London, which is where the Clash were from. Mick Jones lived with his grandma in a flat just like this. So Dave thinks it's cool because it's lumpen working class. It's the almost an underclass.
It's kind of preto working class.
Yeah.
Off the peg. So ready to be.
In his mind, it authenticates him.
Ready to happen.
Yeah. And as you know, in England or in Britain, the class system is... People are obsessed with the class system. Yeah. And they always have been, always will be.
Then he starts to go see these new skinhead bands. He really likes them, but unfortunately they're really racist, these bands. Mm-hmm. And there's a horrible undercurrent of macho homosexuality, and he doesn't realise this. And one of the guys he starts going to see the bands with tries to kiss him, and this disturbs him terribly, so he stops seeing these bands.
It freaks him out.
Yeah,
we're probably heading towards his first suicide attempt.
This could have led to his first suicide. So and it gets to 1984, when people were sick of Thatcher. You know, it was the miners' strike in Britain, and Thatcher had managed to divide even the working classes, so you became aspirational wealthy working class or unemployed, basically.
To buy their council houses.
Yeah, and Dave Mayhem finally realised this was an injustice, so he became an anarchist and joined Red Wedge. But Red Wedge is like not anarchic at all. It's a total. It was a wet and useless political tool, really, to try and get people to vote Labour by using pop music.
And you have another image. Who is there?
That's David Bowie.
Oh, yeah, I didn't recognise him.
Yeah.
Jumping. was quite young there.
Yeah. All part of the makeup.
And I got beaten up by Smith's fan again last night. Yeah. So that happened as well.
Yeah, he was on the night bus home.
And this is the night before Live Aid. The Smiths were never invited onto Live Aid either, which was quite interesting as they were probably one of the biggest groups in the UK. But they weren't welcome there.
And Dave's victimised by violent Smiths fans.
Which is highly unlikely.
Which is incredibly never going to happen. But only in Dave's world would this happen. And so the beating up and the kiss and the beating up, and then he attempts suicide one morning, but he has no luck. But he gives him a terrible headache. It's all the pills he took. He didn't take enough to kill himself, but he took too many that it's given him a headache, which kind of sums him up really. So everything fails, even suicide.
And then something more.
Then he has a stroke of luck.
Real breakthrough.
2 years later, he meets a girl who works in the library. And this is in September 88. And he says, at last, I have a girlfriend. I met her in the library. She's trying to make me grow a ponytail, which is like the epitome of like awful style at the time. But only 1 month later, the girlfriend has left him. So the next few years, are obsessed with trying to get the girlfriend back.
There's a kind of switch in the kind of music he likes for a while. Kind of real middle-of-the-road pop music.
Because he's had sex for the first time, he's not as angry as he used to be. He gets more into like soft soul music because he sees himself as a bit more of a man now.
It's like piss wheat white soul music that was kind of very popular.
And the image of this woman?
Yeah.
Angry girl.
That's his girlfriend. This is the last photograph he managed to take of her, is when he was stalking her. She left him. This is just before she calls the police to get the police to get rid of him.
So he's into restraining order kind of period now. Yeah. So things are starting to go wrong.
He's got a criminal record now, you see.
Around this time, you've got this kind of gypsy punk kind of hippie bands. Things like Glastonbury are really on the rise again. They're suddenly very fashionable. So he kind of keeps on going. But he's attempting now to make his way into a polytechnic, which is around the time when polytechnics became, they were all called universities, they kind of packaged up the whole education system to make it so everybody looked like they were cleverer than they actually were. But he's going through the university process now, albeit again out of sync and too late. He should have really been at university. Yeah.
When he's been at the university about 15 years before.
Yeah. Which is something a bit like myself.
He finally gets around to going.
And just the first time he's really happy.
Yes.
Only for about an hour.
Well, he feels like he's got experience, so he thinks he should apply to do psychology. He thinks he'd make a great psychiatrist or something like that. But unfortunately, because of his views, then he's pretty quickly thrown out of university, and he says, I've been asked to leave university because of my views on homosexuality and race. Whatever happened to freedom of speech? So he's kicked out straight away from the college that he gets into. They try to take legal action against the college, which goes on for another few years, and they decide to counter sue him.
But this whole wall is quite different. They are more just his relation with his girlfriend,
more personal. Music
is not so much part of it.
It's not as much part of it as the rest of his life, no. This is because you see him become more adult, I guess, even his own wonky way. That music, because we suspect he was probably late in his early 20s up to this point. And I think now he's in his mid-20s, spent his whole 20s unemployed, obsessed by this girlfriend who he went out with for 1 month. And he gets into his 30s and then he decides he should go to college or university. So really, I guess he's now maybe in his early 30s around this point.
And what was his relation to Didi?
Well, he never really liked the Ramones because he thought they were they were very poor musicians. And they took drugs. And although he was a punk, he liked people to have computers. He preferred the Police. He thinks the Sting is a great punk, you know.
And the guy from Bob Geldof.
Bob Geldof.
From Boomtown.
Boomtown Rats and the Police were the best punk band.
And the Ramones is not with an S at the end?
Dee Ramone, that's his name, because all the Ramones.
He was a Ramone, okay.
All the Ramones.
Yeah, which is all together.
It's around this time as well where Dee dies.
I know that.
You know, at the end of the century, really.
Yeah. And then he got food poisoning. Yeah.
At Nottingham Carnival.
Tries to join in.
And then have decided to throw in my lot with New Labour. The brand of socialism is just what things this country needs.
Yeah, basically, New Labour are basically the Tories in disguise. It's basically a Conservative government called the Labour government.
Yeah.
And by the time they've already been in power for 7 years.
Everybody else has gone off them. Suddenly realised he thinks they're okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, there is this personal mixture with political ideas. This one is a pretty strong one. Whatever happened to freedom of speech? So sometimes you have statements like that coming up.
That's because he's not allowed to say what he thinks about homosexuals and race issues.
Okay.
Because obviously what he thinks is probably horribly right-wing. So he thinks, well, he still should be allowed his freedom of speech, which is a basic fascist argument. It's the basic BNP argument that if you live under a democracy, you've got to. It doesn't matter what our opinions are; we should be allowed to express them. And obviously, Dave's a bit horribly right-wing, and so he thinks he's using the argument too. And then finally, we get to this.
In 2005.
This is 10 years after Britpop, the height of bands like Blur, Gene, and all these sort of kind of classic British guitar bands.
Very English music at the start of this point.
Yeah, Dave's really into them, and the bass player from Gene, who probably works in a supermarket by now.
I heard yesterday you almost put something on Oasis, but didn't do it. No, that was part of this.
In a way, by choosing Damon Albarn as God, we've kind of made a statement for Oasis because it was such an anti.
And then 2007 is empty.
Yeah, we're into the future now. We're into the next few years. What made?
2008. He took LSD, so this is already programmed. He's like a robot.
Yeah, but he did it by accident. Took LSD by accident, so we think somebody might have spiked his drink.
And here with the Clash.
Yeah, finally he says this is how it ends. End in November 2009. Great, the Clash have reformed. I must say, I much prefer them now they've got rid of all the original members. So it's the idea like bands like Dr. Field with his pub bands that play forever in tiny, tiny towns, and there's nobody left in the band. It's just, you know, the guitarist is
just a brand, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
It just keeps going.
And Dave finally likes the Clash. He sort of comes to peace with punk at this point. Now all the people who are actually in the band have disappeared or died. Mm-hmm. Now he likes them.
That's where we leave it.
And what is the how do you want people to interpret the whole achievement?
we hope that they understand English. Would be good.
I suppose a part of you feels sorry for him, and I hope you feel a bit of pity for him, which, you know, the way pity is kind of the worst thing you should feel for people, but somehow you're going to pity this guy.
He's clearly a horrible person.
It's a whole pop reconstruction.
Yeah.
There's also a secret as well, and if you could use something, you just have to figure out for yourself.
Yeah.